Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show. I'm Carol Schultz, founder and CEO of Vertical Elevation, a talent equity and leadership coaching and advisory firm. We partner with founders and CEOs to create talent-centric organizations where they either don't currently exist or rebuild organizations into talent-centric cultures. We are committed to supporting your values through creating a healthy, successful company, leveraging the best talent, retention, development, and succession strategies. Listen at the end of the show for information about becoming my next guest on one of the most important podcasts for building thriving companies in about 40 minutes. Here we go. Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show. My guest today is Ofer Yorvexel, CEO and founder of Peppery, headquartered in Israel. Ofer, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for hosting me. I'm very impressed with how accurate you pronounced my name.
Well, probably because I'm a member of the tribe. Gives me a little bit of an advantage. So tell us a little bit about what Peppery does at a high level.
We do B2B sales platform as a software in the cloud. We are SaaS-based, helping distributors, helping manufacturers, companies like Dermalogica, like Coke, like OGIware, sell their products business to business using our platforms.
Can you kind of paint us a picture of how that works?
Sure. There are, in general, it's divided, I would say, to two, maybe even three. Nowadays, people are selling in three main ways. Mm-hmm. One, which is the traditional ways in the field. In the past, it used to be carrying a suitcase with samples and things like that. Nowadays, it's on iPad or on any device that is mobile. Mm-hmm. And we help them do that through their mobile device. The second way, it's the e-com way, e-commerce, but business to business e-commerce as opposed to BC, business to consumer, which enables basically the customer of our customers to communicate and take orders themselves with our customers. Mm-hmm. And the third way is over the phone. People can still, you know, take orders over the phone, but nowadays there are better ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. So we help them with these three ways, to repeat myself, telesale, B2B e-com, and field sales.
Got it. What's the biggest problem you solve for your clients?
Two problems. The first one is the complexity of managing multiple channels. While keeping consistency in the experience, in the data, in the look and feel, in everything. Mm-hmm. This is a big, big challenge, especially as it is between different teams of people and different technologies, because typically the field is using native apps, offline, online, while others are using typically browser-based technology, and it's quite hard to mesh them together into the same type of experience if it's not from the same vendor. Mm-hmm. The second problem is, like always in software, automation. We are helping our customers really to fully automate their sales process. So nothing is eliminating mistakes, delays, human errors, wrong interpretations of things. Mm-hmm. We are being replaced gradually. Eventually, there'll be no need for people in this world.
I hope that doesn't happen. and you're privately held. How are you funded?
We are self-sustained. We are generating our own revenues and funding ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But you founded the company in 2009. Were you bootstrapped or did you have any investors?
No, I had two investors. Non-institutional, I must say, really helped bring the company to where it is today. So at the beginning, they helped us a lot.
Very, very good.
I mean, money-wise, for sure.
And you're now, as you say, self-sustained now.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about your journey to, you know, where you are today. You know, you spent really the bulk of your career in sales and marketing, as well as products. So how did you end up as a founder after you left Amdocs? And did you start prior to your departure from there?
Okay. Prior to my departure, I started as an engineer, and I was working as an engineer for Intel and actually in Phoenix, in the Phoenix Valley, and not just for Intel, but several other semiconductor companies back then in the 90s. It was very popular in the Midwest, Southwest. Mm-hmm. Then I got an offer from a friend of mine who was learning with me in the university to manage a company in Boston, a software company. And this is how I got into software. Mm-hmm. And managing that company back then in Boston, I started to work more and more with customers, you know, and loved it. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Israel and worked for several other companies as you say, you know, VP sales, VP marketing, and VP product. And really, this is the way things evolved. Amdocs, how I started the Peppery. So actually, I was approached by two different individuals by chance that were sent by those investors, and by coincidence, both individuals recommended them to speak with me about this opportunity.
Oh, interesting.
So they spoke with me about a certain opportunity, which is actually something that is completely different than what Peppery is doing today. Mm-hmm. And we reached an agreement to do back then what was warranty. This is how it's all started. We were managing warranties in the cloud, warranties of mainly watches. And after 3 to 4 years, we switched focus to what we are doing today.
Interesting. So what was it about your background that prepared you for what you're doing right now? And what was it about your background that had these two, these people approach you about a company?
One of them used to work with me.
Okay.
As a peer. Mm-hmm. And knew one of the people who was consulting to that investor. Mm-hmm. The other one was a board member in the company I was managing in Boston. Mm-hmm. And most likely they thought I might be the right person to take this opportunity. And the other one, the one from the board, is sort of a friend of mine as well. And I told him I'm looking for something new. So he knew about it as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What kind of challenges would you say you've encountered as a first-time founder and CEO?
To be honest, I don't think I encountered... I think the only thing is really managing cash. And, you know, that suddenly it's your responsibility to bring cash so the company will not be shut down.
Right.
With investors. So this is the only one. But I need to say that throughout my career, I always felt like I'm managing the business I was working for. Mm-hmm. I was always looking, you know, to the top, you know, on where we stand, whether we'll survive or whether how are we going to grow. And so it was not new to me, but there is a different feeling when you know it's all on you.
Yeah, right. And yeah, and that's really what I was, you know, what I'm asking about. You're in a fairly competitive market, yes?
Very competitive, yeah.
So, you know, where do you stack up with your competitors? What are some of the challenges that you and or your competitors are facing in the industry? And what makes Peppery different from your competition?
Yeah, you know, selling a software that helps you sell, which is generally speaking sort of CRM, is a very, mm-hmm. very competitive market. And I'm competing with the low end of the market, you know, companies that are extremely small, typically low quality, very rigid product, but will give typically a much lower price, not necessarily cost of ownership, but price to their product. And then I compete with the companies that are the largest in the world, very high quality, very slow movers in terms of their ability to make changes for a specific customer. But on the other end, they have all the money in the world, and most likely they'll be quite expensive as well.
Right.
So within this boundaries, and you can find, and I'm not exaggerating, at least hundreds, if not thousands of companies dealing with things that are touching what we are doing.
Sure.
Wide. You need to define what makes you unique, as you asked. And you do that by focusing on certain, to start with, territories, verticals, and solutions within it, because sales is a very wide thing. And selling product versus services, there is a huge difference. And then there is a huge difference between selling fast-moving product to slow-moving product. And then you go further and you'll see that the huge difference between those that are more control-type product like alcohol and non-controlled. And there's so many things that can make a difference eventually in the way that you need to solve the problem for your customer. So you need to choose, you know, where you want to be the best, and you cannot be the best in everything, especially being a small company.
Right.
Where we differentiate ourselves is we are focusing on consumer goods mainly, sales with consumer goods, not just also industrial, but it's physical goods and generally speaking product that have one SKU. We are not dealing with the bomb of the product.
Okay.
And then on customers that are mid-market and above, and typically, and in certain verticals, we are very strong in fast-moving, like food, beverages, beauty, as well as in eyewear. We are very strong. Eyewear, home and gift. There are certain industries that we are very strong at. Now, those industries have, these industries have very unique requirements, and we are trying to address them better than any other.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's, is that something that has evolved throughout the years where, you know, even though you may be industry agnostic by focusing on a particular industry or a couple of different vertical markets where you can be the leader in that space?
Yeah, I think it's both. I like to think about it as a boat, you know, where you have the center of gravity. So when you start, you need to see where the boat is moving to. And once you realize, okay, this is where my strength is, and you learn it from the market, it's very hard to learn it around, you know, in the office. This is where you need to make a decision. Okay, this is where I want to focus. This is where I need to focus. And in order to win, and you need to think long term. Otherwise, it's very tempting not to do that. You chase every opportunity you encounter.
Have you taken any of your current clients from any of your competitors?
Sure.
And how does that usually come about? Are they reaching out to you because they're unsatisfied, or are you actually doing active outreach to them?
You know, in 12 years, it's different reason, different different cycles. But generally speaking, typically customer would leave a vendor because he cannot, either does not provide them a good service. We had situations like that. But more often, I would say, because he cannot address their requirements from architecture perspective. So it's not like a small feature that they can quick on, but it's something that is more than that. And we do see situations like that, that customers And typically they will use, you know, a lifetime of a product, a software product is anywhere from 3 to 6 years. Mm-hmm. And once you reach this 3 to 6 years, typically the customer will start to ask himself, are there better product out there? Mm-hmm.
What's your retention currently, your customer retention?
I can say that it's negative, it's positive, meaning I'm used to talk about churn. So right. in net, it's positive. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exposing these numbers. I can tell you that it's low.
Good.
Compared to industry standards.
So I'll assume that your retention is somewhere north of 90% based on what you're telling me. Good. Which is great. What do you see your clients having wasted time and money on, if anything, prior to them becoming a customer?
You mean when they are stuck and not upgrading their systems to a system like ours?
Yeah, it could be. Yes. Anything that they may be wasting time and money on, you know, in your industry.
When you deal with, there is a caricature. I hope mm-hmm. I'm pronouncing it right. You will need to forgive me. I'm an Israeli. But there is that I really love. You see a bottle and, people from the Stone Age, going with knives and trying to kill the enemies. The guy is running after them with this weapon, with a machine gun, and telling him, try, and they say, go away, we don't have time for you. So I think this is the bigger thing, people typically, especially as you go to smaller company, they are so busy with their ongoing operation. Mm-hmm. In many cases, they don't have time, and I don't blame them. I see it also in my company, in many cases, it's very hard to stop and to say, okay, can we do things differently? Can we do things better? And typically doing a project like that is not simple. You need to really revisit your processes, your data, mm-hmm. and really put structure into things that not necessarily too structured. So it's not easy to automate your processes.
Right.
This is the main reason. Sorry.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry. How do your prospects typically connect with you? How do you market?
This is quite unique for Pepperi. I think we are totally inbound. We are not doing any. I don't have SDRs. Mm-hmm. No one is. We are not chasing new customers by phone. So typically, we might do webinars. We might do things to attract customer. Mm-hmm. But then we will not chase them unless they contact us and explicitly say, can we talk? Can I see a demo? Can you answer blah, blah? Can you do this and that? And this is how we start the discussion. Mm-hmm. So we are totally inbound in that respect. We're just trying to publish as many case studies that are relevant to those industries and really be there in podcasts like this as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, that's a really interesting strategy. I think you're, in all the years I've been doing this, probably the first person who's ever said they're totally inbound. Why is that you're not doing any outbound with SDRs or anything like that?
Maybe because I'm wrong.
Or maybe not, right?
I have.
There's got to be a method behind your madness, right?
As you rightly said, I have a lot of sales and marketing experience. Mm-hmm. And what I learned is that, and I think it's like in every other thing, there are certain methods that are way more efficient. Mm-hmm. And then as you exhaust them, you are forced to, if you really want to continue growing or accelerate, you might need to do things that are less efficient, but still give you the gross numbers you need. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with the fact that with our structure, that I don't have money to really to burn just in order to show growth. as expected from typically VC-based companies.
Right, I was just thinking that.
So I don't have this pressure to show exponential growth on one hand. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I don't have the money they have to really do that. Mm-hmm. So everything I do is way more careful and way more efficient in that respect. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I like it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go on.
I'm not finished.
Have you considered it all over the last 12 years, taking any institutional financing?
Sure. Actually, 1 year, I went out to do that, only 1 year, mm-hmm. In a specific year. We had like two offers on the table, but eventually we decided to refuse to take them.
Okay. Why?
I think it's because of that reason we just described. They were looking on our growth figures and estimated the company accordingly. Mm-hmm. And we thought that it's not the right valuation, and we thought the company can do better without money in terms of increasing its valuation, increasing mm-hmm. its size, and maybe do it later. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we are opposing it as a strategy. It's just a timing.
Not the right time. Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, it proved to be right, because since then the company continued the growth. You might be saying I'm wrong, because maybe if we had, you know, tons of millions of dollars, we could accelerate, but and worth much more. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, I mean, listen, Alfred, that's a really great point. I think about that a lot, because I deal with a lot of startups personally, and have over the last almost 30 years. And, you know, I was talking to a founder, an insurtech founder. I think we had this conversation last year, and I said, so how's business going? He says, it's going well. I said, have you decided if you're going to take an A round or not, or going to continue to bootstrap? And he said, yeah, well, we're thinking about it. And I, you know, went and asked him, which would be the same I would ask you, is, you know, do you believe you're able to get from point A to point B, whatever that is, in the same time on your own as you would if you had that outside funding? And can you still grow your company the way you want to with that outside funding, right? Those are the questions you need to ask.
Yeah. And like anything else, there is always pros and cons to each.
Correct.
I think we are a bit different in that respect. And the way we view it, I mean, from the majority of the businesses, mm-hmm. I think I can tell you we reached a point that we are growing. We are not trying to be profitable, but I mean, we are not burning money, because better take the money and pour it back into the company for growth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are growing. We are sort of profitable. And yes, I think now is, when I say now, maybe toward the end of this year, it will be the right timing for us to do that. I think we are going to have a fabulous year this year.
That's fantastic. How much are you growing?
We have a fabulous quarter this quarter. Really amazing one.
Awesome. How much have you been growing year over year, percentage-wise?
Not a lot, as you can imagine. It's like 20%.
Okay. Now, listen, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye.
Sorry?
It's better than a sharp stick in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's like I said, to your point, when you don't take outside funding, you don't have the same pressures, right? And it's not for me or anyone else to tell you that your company needs to grow, you know, at 30 or 40 or 50% per year, right? It's your company, and you know how you want it to grow. You know, and you have different pressures the way you're doing it now than you would if you were to take institutional funding. And that may make sense, you know, later in the year, to your point. Tell us a little bit about your company culture. How many employees do you have right now?
Around 80.
Around 80. So 80 employees. Tell me a little bit about your company culture and, you know, what you believe makes it unique. And if I was an employee of yours, what would I particularly notice about that?
I think we have sort of a family type culture, and you know, data will tell you that that our retention rate employee wise is very high.
Good.
Unlike a typical
tech firm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have people here who are here from the beginning and really started as student and became team leader and vice president. Mm-hmm. There is sort of a family feeling here, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Actually, everyone who's working in this company is telling me that that we have a different, even people that just entered the office are telling me that there is a different atmosphere in this company in that respect. Mm-hmm. I think we are very transparent. There's no hierarchy in the company in respect to, there, of course there is, but in terms of the way we do things on day to day, I personally speak, and I know all the employees, and speak, when I say I know them, not just what they're doing at work, but I really know their families and so mm-hmm. forth. And I think it's quite unique in this industry, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, I would say it's fairly unique. I have talked to others that do the same, and I, you know, always cheer you on, because I think it's a wonderful way to, of course, maintain the retention rate, right? Do you have a particular strategy? You say you know everyone, you've got 80 employees. What are you doing proactively to make sure that you're keeping your finger directly on the pulse of your employees?
Generally speaking, you know, each individual is different, and I'm sure you know it. Mm-hmm. But there are some, the majority of the individuals are trying to do the same things. You know, we are all quite similar in what we are trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us are looking for purpose. Mm-hmm. I think it's the number one thing. For the majority of us, and to feel that we are valued. These are the two things that we are looking at, mm-hmm. at work, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Not just at work, but in general, in life. Mm-hmm. And I think for the big majority of the people, if you provide them these two things, and of course, salary and all other things are important, and you cannot be giving them something that is below standard.
Right.
But as long as you are on standard with the rest, and I don't think we are above standard with the rest, and I don't think we are below, we are pretty much where the industry is. Mm-hmm. So for as long as the other basic stuff is met, I think this is the key to keep your employees. And I think if they feel that you value them, that you have a direction, that you are consistent in the way that you make decisions, that you value them as people, as individuals. Mm-hmm. They value you back. This is the way I feel. In general.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. You know, people. I believe people. Yes, you have to pay people a salary so they can live. Right, we all need that, but I think what's more important is people really want to do good work, and they want to do interesting work, and they want to feel like they're contributing.
Yeah.
Right.
And they want, and in order to do that, you need to create an atmosphere that they really care about the company, that they understand what the company is trying to achieve, and they share the concern and the wins of the company as their concern, as their wins.
Right.
And in order to do that, you need to be transparent with them, but really transparent, and not let them feel like, no, I'm your boss and this is not for you to know.
Right.
I'm sharing pretty much the entire information with the employees on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I don't remember myself telling an employee, this is not the data you should know. Of course, I'm not pertaining to salaries, but
right, of course.
Anything else I share with them.
Mm-hmm. So where do you see yourself investing resources for growth over the next year? And would that then change if you do take institutional capital?
Yeah. There's actually, it's one of my mantras this year to everyone. There are two areas that are blocking our growth right now. Number one is marketing,
mm-hmm.
because no one knows about Pepper. We're too small, you know.
That's outbound.
And there is a wow factor when we do a presentation and a demo to companies that are searching for a solution like that. So,
mm-hmm.
So I think marketing is number one, and I'm emphasizing marketing as opposed to sales.
I get it. I completely agree, in fact.
And the number two is R&D. If I could accelerate my development and do things that, and there's always things that you want to do, and you want to do them faster for your customers, mm-hmm. and in order to innovate faster. So these are the two areas that I will invest more, mm-hmm. dramatically more. And if I had tons of money, I would still focus on these two in general, before spending money on other places.
Good.
But by definition, when you invest there, you need to invest in other places. There is a certain level of balance that you need to keep, but the majority of
right.
it is
here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I can't tell you the numbers of companies that if you don't market, they just fall by the wayside. It is, I mean, I think it's really the single most important thing a company can do once they have a product built and, you know, so on and so forth. People have to know who you are.
I did not say in marketing, go to outbound. I would still stick to inbound.
Right. No, I got it. But so what do you consider marketing then? So what kind of marketing do you do?
More events, more content,
more content. Yep.
More stories with my customers.
Okay. Yep.
We have amazing, beautiful stories with some of our customers. I'm amazed when I'm talking to them. And last week I was interviewing two large customers in the US,
mm-hmm.
and I learned so much, seriously, that I didn't know. And I'm always learning, and it's like, wow, if I could tell that to the world, then I can always say, oh, this is a new angle that we can talk about. You know, and there's so many things that you can do, but you need people to do it. You need money to do it. So I think these are the type of things that mm-hmm. be more thought leadership, be more known as a thought leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really an important point. If somebody were just getting into your industry, what kind of advice would you give them?
Into our specific industry?
Mm-hmm.
Focus.
Focus?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
More than other industries, because it's crowded. The more your space is crowded, your focus is more important.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. What are the biggest opportunities and threats in your space?
The opportunity is moving to digital. It's quite obvious that the world is moving to everything. So helping our customers in this transition, because the non-digital world is not going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the foreseeing immediate future.
Right.
So helping in this transition, there's a huge opportunity here. The threat is centralization, that everything will go to, you know, to few giant vendors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a real, real threat.
Mm-hmm.
When you analyze it, always when you look on industries from outside, big majorities of those right. industries, you might know two, three names and you think the entire industry is those names, but then when you analyze it money-wise,
sure.
you realize that in the big majority of the times, it's just fraction of where the entire
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. I was actually thinking that earlier in our conversation when we were talking about your competitors, because, you know, I remember in the heyday of SAP, I mean, this has got to be, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, if not more. I just can't remember. It's been so long. You know, people would think of SAP and think of ERP and think they own the entire market. And I believe at the most, if I'm remembering correctly, they owned about 35% of the market. And you know, the overwhelming was, boy, they have every customer. Well, clearly they don't, right?
Oh, you'll be shocked. This, you'll
to your point.
The amount of ERPs that we are running into even today, we are integrated to about 100 different ERPs.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the view is like one company owns everything, right? But that's really not the case.
I was shocked when I saw how the money of media is spread. I thought Google is controlling the world and media and blah. And suddenly when I saw someone showed me a chart about the media, about all the companies that are above $1 billion in sales.
Right.
Tons of companies other than Google. Of course, Google is the giant. Okay,
right.
But there are like plenty of others who are over $1 billion.
That's right.
You just need to find your niche. And it's like if you look at history, you know, empires are going up, but then they go down finally.
Sure.
Eventually, you know, the world is changing all the time. It cannot be at the top all the time.
Right. So how do you spend your time when you're not working?
In the sea.
Doing what in the sea?
Sailing, paddling, surfing. I like the sea.
You live in a good place.
Almost every day I spend at least 4 or 5 times a week. I'm spending like 2 hours a day in the sea.
That's fantastic. And you have children, yeah?
Young. I have 2 children that are like in their late 20s.
Okay, so yeah, so it's not like you have young kids that are spending that time with you. So
no, my daughter did a worldwide trip by herself, all around surfing. She was surfing all over the world.
Oh, awesome!
And so I spend some time with her. Sometimes we go together to the beach.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. So if somebody listening is thinking, God, this is such a super cool company, I'd love to investigate working for them. What would you suggest they do?
Contact us, peppery.com, and send us a message and we'll be with you.
Mm-hmm. And that's P-E-P-P-E-R-I.
Like pepper and then I at the end.
Gotcha. So I have to ask you one final question. What's with the frogs?
It's a long answer. You have time?
Yeah, I have time if you have time. I'll make the time. Yeah,
the previous name was Warranty, but it was written like W-R-N-T-Y. No one knew how to find it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was exactly around what we were doing, which is warranties in the cloud. And as we switched to what we're doing now, I realized that it was such a smart decision, which I will recommend also to other founders. I realized that I don't know where the company will end up.
Yeah.
And the first switch was to do a solution for sales rep, and the product was Super Rep. You might find even articles on that from 10 years ago, you know, on Google. So anyway, so I decided that the next name I will give to the company, I realized Warranty is not a good name. And I had like a few criteria. First of all, that it must be .com and it must be cheap, so affordable.
Right.
And it must be something that it will be easy to pronounce and to write.
Mm-hmm.
I found Peppery. And then I realized through dinner with a friend of mine in New York, my best friend. He's a genius, this guy. And he told me, you know, Peppery is a frog. I told him, what are you talking about? I thought it's a pepper, and we'll do something with pepper. Say, no, Peppery is a frog from Peru. I told him, okay. I looked into Google and it was right. I say, okay, we'll do a fraud. And the interesting part is, when I presented that in the board, that I'm changing the name to Frog, to Peppery, I have those two investors, and one of them opened his eyes on me and he say, "A frog?" I say, "Yeah," and I didn't know where is he taking it.
Right.
And then he said, "I love frogs." And I asked him, "Why do you love frogs?" He said, "Because they can only move forward."
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then this guy told me, for 40 years, I have a Swarovski frog on my desk, and I'm going to give it to you, and I have it here. It's and a few days later, it arrived by mail from Switzerland, from his desk to my
that's
desk.
That's awesome. I love it.
It's a true story.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I have to say, I really appreciate the time you spent, and I really want to thank you, offer your Vexel, CEO and founder of Peppery. It's really been a delight to spend time with you today.
Thank you very, very much. It was a pleasure.
Carol Schultz here. Thank you so much for listening to Authentically Successful. If you are a successful founder or CEO who would like to be on this program, please visit www.verticalelevation.com/podcast/apply. If you learned something from this interview and it made a difference, would you please share this episode on LinkedIn? You can also do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend. And if you know somebody that would be a great guest, tag them on LinkedIn or Twitter and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Authentically Successful. I love seeing your posts and great suggestions. Lastly, we are regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any, please subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, please go to my website, verticalelevation.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.